Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is an MCRIT Wii. The title of this Wii is What the Hell is a Mapleson B Circuit and Why You Probably Shouldn't Care. Now let me give you some background on this. I have a friend and an anesthesiologist. He's called Nicholas Crimes. Nicholas is a brilliant guy. Along with Peter Fritz, he invented the Vortex approach to difficult airway management. He runs an excellent blog called Clinical Cred. And he did a post there advocating the Mapleson B circuit as the ultimate and, to his mind, only acceptable pre-oxygenation device, which I just found to be crazy. Now, the reason I am timing this Wii right now is we are about to head to SMAC, and if there's one thing Nicholas is known for, it is his book-length responses to anything you put out there disagreeing with his stuff. And his responses are always erudite, but I can only imagine take an enormous amount of time. So I figure if I put it out now, it'll be very frustrating to him to have to decide whether he's going to respond right away or be preparing his SMAC presentations. So what is this Mapleson B circuit? And I highly advise, if you could pause this podcast for a second, go over to Clinical Cred, just put that in Google, and then search for Mapleson B circuit on his site, or, you know, just come to mcrit.org and find the show notes for this Wii, and there's a link to it there. And then you could really read his post and understand where I'm coming from. But just for those people, and I think it's most of you because I know my listeners, who are too lazy to do that, I'll explain. The Mapleson B circuit is essentially like you take that piece of the anesthesia machine you remember from when you did your anesthetics rotations as a resident or registrar, that piece that had the non-auto-inflating bag that you were supposed to bag the patient with, and the mask that went along with it, and it kind of separates that out from the anesthesia machine, and it could be used to do that same incredibly frustrating means of ventilation away from the OR. And these circuits were used for anesthetics in the good old days. I thought they were pretty much consigned to the trash heap, but seemingly some people still think this is a good idea. Now, why am I talking about this as opposed to just responding to Nick? It's because I think there are general points you could take home for your use of any pre-oxygenation methodologies in the ED from the reasons I disagree with Nick. So that's the background of this whole Wii. Now, in order to understand my take on things, you need to understand that I feel there are only two approaches to pre-oxygenation. Rich Levitan and I outlined this in the paper we wrote on pre-oxygenation, and there's the standard approach and the shunt physiology approach. The standard approach is you put the patient on a non-rebreather mask at greater than or equal to 15 liters per minute. A non-rebreather at 15 liters per minute will not deliver near 100% FiO2, and this is a very supportable reason not to use the non-rebreather alone. Now, you can make this better by radically increasing the flow rate. So instead of just turning the dial to 15, you turn as far as it'll go, which will get you up to 30 or 40 liters per minute, and then it does provide greater than 90% FiO2. I'm coming around to agreeing with Nick that this is not a great solution. There is a much better solution. Every patient should be intubated with a nasal cannula on their face so you can get apneic oxygenation. Put the nasal cannula on right up front as you're pre-oxygenating them. Turn the dial to 10 to 15 liters per minute, and then put your non-rebreather at 15 liters per minute over it. So now, you will never use the non-rebreather alone again. You will use non-rebreather plus nasal cannula. And those two in combination will always give you greater than 90% FiO2, even if your flow meter on your non-rebreather can't go beyond 15. This is a easier, more consistent, and less scary means of providing pre-oxygenation than my former recommendation of non-rebreather at 30, 40 liters per minute. So just do this from now on. They're going to need a nasal cannula anyway. This way you won't forget it. So non-rebreather on one oxygen port, nasal cannula on the other. If the patient is now greater than 95% oxygen saturation, preferably 100, they are cool with the standard approach. If they are not, then you move to the second approach, which is the shunt physiology approach. And for that, the options are a BVM with a PEEP valve with a nasal cannula underneath at 10 to 15 liters per minute, or a non-invasive positive pressure machine, whether that be a ventilator or a standalone non-invasive machine, using a non-invasive mask with a nasal cannula underneath it, or If you don't have a non-invasive mask, just substitute a BVM mask, and then you could either hold it on their face, which is much less preferable, or you should probably just go up to the OR just once and steal a set of their OR mask straps, and those could be reused and just washed off between patients because it just touches the outside of their face, and that will allow you to put the BVM mask on them without having to hold it. As you'll see very shortly, not holding it, I think, is a better approach. But for all of these techniques, all of them require a nasal cannula underneath at 10 to 15 liters per minute. And then if they're shunt physio, you're either using the BVM with the P-valve or the non-invasive positive pressure using either ventilator or a standalone machine. So there you go. That's our approach. It's equipment we're all familiar with, we all use. Maybe the PEEP valve is new to you, but it shouldn't be. It's something you should have in your ED. Patients will die if you don't have these. If you want the reasons why you have to come hear my laryngoscope as a murder weapon talk, I don't have time to relay it now. Now, this makes a lot of sense to me, these two approaches. Let's talk about the reasons Nick wants to go another way, use this antiquated Mapleson B circuit. Well, the first argument he makes is that there is now automatic checking of your reoxygenation device. Since you are making it your pre-oxygenation device as well, it's impossible to not have this thing hooked up to oxygen for it not to be in the room because you're actually using it as your pre-oxygenation device. And I mean, I'm not going to argue with the truth of that. It's just, if that's what you're reliant on, then you're kind of hosed in all sorts of ways. Maybe instead you should use a checklist and make sure everything's there, because if you're silly enough not to have a BVM in the room, then you're probably not smart enough to have all the other things you need in the room, like difficult airway equipment, the right medications, et cetera, et cetera. I did a podcast on this. So I'm not putting this as a star for the Mapleson B. Now, the next thing is, Nick says it ensures that you confirm the proper mask size for the patient before you actually need to use the device for reoxygenation. Now, if I've ever actually seen alternative masks, this may be a valid point, but they do not exist in my ED or ICU, nor in any of the EDs or ICUs I have worked or looked at when I visited for grand rounds. Everyone just has these disposable BVMs with a one mask on it for adults, and now we do have peds bags and neonate bags, but that's it. We do not have various mask sizes for adults, and we do not have those inflatable masks which allow you to take in or take out or put in additional air to make them more conforming to the patient's face. These just don't exist, so I don't check for them. If I had multiple BVM masks, that would be part of my checklist, and I would check which mask properly fit the patient by sticking it on their face. Since I don't, then we don't. Now, the next thing Nick talks about is PEEP. He says the Mapleson B can provide PEEP, and it can, and he makes a straw man argument against the BVM. But you should never, ever be using a BVM in a patient that needs PEEP without already having a PEEP valve on the BVM. It goes without saying that if they needed PEEP for pre-oxygenation, they'll need it for reoxygenation, and the PEEP valve will be there. The vent also is very good at providing PEEP. It's kind of its job. So this is not a win for the Mapleson in my mind. Now, I'm not 100% sure about this, but I'm pretty sure that adding PEEP using the Mapleson actually increases the rate of rebreathing of the patient's carbon dioxide. Now, why am I even talking about this rebreathing thing? Well, patients wouldn't rebreathe through a BVM. Why would they rebreathe through any device you'd use to reoxygenate them? Well, the design of the Mapleson B, and this is still a surprise to me, actually allows the patient to rebreathe CO2. And now if you turn the flow rate up way, way high, then you ameliorate that problem to some extent. I think if you're now turning up the PEEP significantly, that rebreathing becomes a problem again. Now, Nick very well may correct me and tell me I'm an idiot and I'm absolutely wrong, and that's fine. But at least looking at the design of these bad boys, they're going to rebreathe CO2 if you turn that PEEP up on the Mapleson B. Doesn't seem very clever. You cannot rebreathe CO2 with a standard BVM. You cannot rebreathe CO2 with a BVM with a PEEP valve. All right, AppOx. Nick makes the argument the Mapleson B is better for AppOx than the BVM. And that's absolutely true because the BVM does not work for AppOx. What does work for AppOx is a nasal cannula, which should be on during any intubation and therefore no advantage to the Mapleson B. It's not very good at apneic oxygenation. It's just better than the BVM. You know what's really good? Nasal cannula. Nick now mentions, very similar to the checking argument, that the Mapleson B will have you putting the end-tidal CO2 on the device before you start. I put the end-tidal CO2 on my BVM before I start, and if you forget it with the BVM, you will forget it with the Mapleson B. I advocate if you're using a BVM or a ventilator that you have the end-tidal CO2 on during the pre-oxygenation so you can see the adequacy of your patient getting these breaths. Nick advocates the same. It is not a specific thing to the Mapleson B. Now, a legitimate, but to my mind, not important argument is it actually is a little bit easier to breathe through a Mapleson B circuit than it is through a BVM when the patient's spontaneously breathing. But that's without PEEP. If you add PEEP, I can't imagine there's any significant difference. And our patients who are spontaneously breathing that do not need PEEP are breathing through a nasal cannula and non-rebreather, which is even less resistance than the Mapleson B. I do not score anything for this argument. Now, an argument that is significant and not discussed is why we like the non-rebreather nasal cannula combination, or lacking that in a patient with shunt physiology, a device you could strap to their face. It's because if you release your attention for even 2 seconds and let the patient breathe one breath of room air with any of these devices that require you holding it on the patient's face, they will significantly ruin your denitrogenation. And even though their saturation may still read 100%, there's a good chance they're going to have less time during their apneic period before they desaturate. And I guarantee you, the nurse is going to ask you what drugs you want, and you're going to look up for a second, and your hand's going to slip off, and they're going to entrain room air. It's just silly to sit there at the patient's head holding something on their face when you don't need to. Nick says never use the non-rebreather nasal cannula combination. Always be holding a mask on their face. This is just the silliest thing ever, to waste a provider holding something on the patient's face, making the patient uncomfortable when it's totally unnecessary and doesn't provide anything good in a patient without shunt physiology and doesn't provide anything better than using a non-invasive mask or BVM with straps. Now let's get to the real root of this all. The whole purpose Nick is telling you to use this Mapleson B is so that you could get some understanding of whether you're going to get an adequate mask seal and therefore get training in one-hand mask holding using the Mapleson B. This argument for me is completely off for ED and critical care guys. You see, Cliff and I have been arguing for a good number of podcasts that how you train is how you fight. I do not ever want people holding a one-hand mask seal on a BVM mask or a Mapleson B mask. And this is not a good way to train. I did 2 weeks with a trauma anesthesiologist recently, and I did, I think, 10 to 12 inductions a day. It's an incredibly busy service at the Shock Trauma Center. And as a result, I was holding a lot of one-hand mask seals. And by the end of that, I was better than I ever was before, and my hand ached, and I could do it. And each time I was doing it, and each time I got that perfect one-hand mask seal, I said to myself, this is just a complete waste of my time, because in real-life practice, in resuscitation, I never should be holding one of these seals. Never, ever, ever hold a one-hand mask seal. There's no reason to do this at all. And if you think your patients are going to enjoy the two-hand mask seal, they probably aren't. But the two-hand mask seal that I advocate is something that no conscious patient should ever be exposed to. You see, Nick's argument is that if you could get a one-hand mask seal during your pre-oxygenation, it means you probably will be able to do the same when you paralyze the patient. And I don't disagree with it. The opposite is not true. The inability to get a good one-hand mask seal during the pre-oxygenation means nothing for what I'm actually going to do once I induce these patients. You see, when I actually do need to use a BVM to re-oxygenate, the patient will have an oral airway in their mouth, and then I will do a triple maneuver, head tilt, chin lift, jaw advancement, that is super painful and unacceptable to ever expose patients to. And that will be the maneuver that will get me the ability to reoxygenate these patients. And that is the only maneuver, to my mind, you should train in if you're a resuscitationist as opposed to an anesthesiologist. The only way you should have hands on a BVM mask or a Mapleson B mask is with doing something that would be excruciatingly painful to a conscious patient. And that is what I want my residents to train to do so that when they actually are in that circumstance where it's important to save this patient's life by getting vital oxygen to their lungs, that is the technique they use. This is the same reason I tell my residents to only train with Mac blades. They will not, during their career, be good enough at Miller's and Mac's to make that a viable learning strategy. They should learn one blade perfectly. And if you fail at good to hand BVM masking using a oral airway, then you move to an LMA. There is no room or benefit to my mind to learning why it's a good idea to learn one hand mask seal, BVMing or Mapleson B circuiting. If you're going to do two hands, then you lose one of the main reasons that Nick says it's such a good idea to use the Mapleson B, which is some gauge of compliance. A, I'm capable of feeling compliance with the BVM. B, I don't particularly care. It doesn't matter. If you don't know what your patient's compliance is based on their pathology, it's not going to help you to know later on and have this in the back of your mind. You're still going to do the same stuff. You're still going to try to ventilate them, and if fail, move to other airway maneuvers. Nick spends a lot of time talking about primary and secondary leaks. It doesn't matter to me very much, but I'll explain what they are. I mean, there is some validity to this point. A primary leak is a problem with the patient's mask face interfacing. It's a leak at the level of the mask. And you'll know this on a Mapleson B because the bag will deflate, and then you'll have to wait for it to reinflate in order to give another breath. You remember this from your anesthesia rotation, how insanely annoying it was that if you gave one bad breath, you couldn't repeat the breath in a proper fashion until the bag refilled. It was just silly, but you'll know if there's a primary leak. Guess what? I know there's a primary leak because I'm monitoring end-tidal CO2 on every ventilation I give, and I'll know whether the air got in or not. And then a secondary leak is a good mask face interface, but it's still really hard to bag, so much so that air blows out the side of the mask, and you'll know that because the bag stays inflated. I don't care. I can perceive this with the BVM. It's called easy squeezy or hard squeezy, and I don't think it helps you. You know what helps you? End-tidal CO2. That's what you need to know if your breaths are going in or not. Now, there's an article just published in the anesthesia literature, it's in the show notes, that talks about this concept of gentle face mask ventilation. You know, a lot of the anesthesiologists like doing this. They like squeezing that bag, even when the patient doesn't need the breath. And I imagine the Mapleson B encourages this even further. And what this article showed, and they did ultrasounds of the patient's stomachs, is that if you are breathing at greater than 15 centimeters of water, which is an insanely low pressure, they are entraining gas into the stomach through the lower esophageal sphincter. There is no reason to ever give these patients positive pressure breaths unless you have to. Don't do it. Yet another disadvantage to something that's going to inspire you to breathe for these patients. Don't do it. So in summary, I don't see any advantage to a Mapleson B. Nick's going to tell me I'm wrong, but I think it's just a matter of perspective. If you're an anesthesiologist, you're going to be training your entire career on a circuit very similar to the Mapleson B. By all means, bring one of these to your codes and resuscitations and use them. This is how you train, so fight with it. But we do not use the standard anesthesia machine with its non-self-inflating bag on a regular basis in emergency medicine. It's not how we train, and I don't want you fighting that way. So, if you can, go hands-free, nasal cannula, non-rebreather mask. You'll get beautiful pre-oxygenation, and you will not have to smash something on the patient's face. If there's shunt physiology, BVM with a PEEP valve with a nasal cannula or a ventilator or an oscillator, which I'll talk about in a couple of shows from now, and that will work just fine. And I think it's the way you should go in resuscitation. Now, it's not to say the BVM is perfect. It's a kind of crappy device because it can be made much better. It should have a limit to its inspiratory flow. There is no reason people should be able to give a breath over a quarter of a second. And those BVMs, I believe, are available. They're just not commonly available. There should be a little light that tells you when 5 seconds has gone by, so you should give another breath. And there should be some way to limit the amount of tidal volume. There is no reason to have 2,000 cc bags that deliver 1,200 cc's of breath. They should be 1,000 cc bags that deliver 500 cc's of breath when you squeeze them reasonably. Or you could just use the ventilator, or you could just use the oscillator. All right, this has gone long for a wee. I'm going to stop there. I'm sure Nick will have a retort, but hopefully he won't be able to get it out until after SMAC. Scott Weingart, MCRIT Wee, saying bye-bye.